Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and as always, you're part of our weekly conversation. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open at 941-3689, 941-3689 if you call us from Oahu, and from the neighbor islands, 877-941-368 now. Now think back for just a moment to being in middle school. For many of us, that was the stage of full-bloom awkwardness. Not quite young adults and certainly not little kids. Not exactly the easiest of times as hormones kicked in and began to challenge better judgment. Now stop thinking about that. There's only so much of that memory lane you probably want to walk down. And consider an average middle schooler today. The ticking of the biological clocks and sexual orientation may have a lot in common, but despite being more connected to information, teens and tweens today are not always connected to the right information, especially about sex, which is why Hawaii, as in many other states, kids are getting medically accurate sexual health instruction at school. What could be wrong with that? Not much, according to my guess. It's why they've developed and or support Hawaii's curriculum, Pono Choices. But the program has had its critics who say the information isn't age-appropriate or accurate, and that the DOE erred in being too secretive about the program and not making the curriculum public. Tonight, you get to have your say and ask your questions about the program to our panelists. Joining us tonight, Peter Whitaker. He's the chief of the STD AIDS Prevention Branch in the Hawaii Department of Health. He's previously worked in the World Health Organization Global AIDS Program in Geneva and Africa. Judith Clark is also here. She's the executive director of the Hawaii Youth Services Network. She's developed culturally appropriate programs and curriculum materials for Asian and Pacific Islander youth on teen pregnancy, HIV, and teen dating violence prevention. She also manages the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Partnership of the Pacific in Hawaii. And Kelly Roberts is here. She's the principal researcher for the Pono Choices curriculum. She's also an associate professor at the Center on Disability Studies. And she's also been a high school special education teacher and mental health coordinator. And again, you're here too. Our number to reach us is 941-3689 from Oahu and 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may be listening to the live stream. Thank you all for being here. When you look back at the reason why we developed this curriculum and why it's being taught, it goes strictly back to some of the statistics that we've seen regarding teen pregnancy, where we're like the 10th highest in the nation, also very high rates of chlamydia. A lot of reasons that were built into why this program was developed with the grant that Kelly, you got in 2012. Did you ever for a minute think that this would send you into a controversy?
No. Initially writing the grant, the intention was to help educate kids so they can make informed choices. And being an educator, it seemed like the right thing to do and still does. We need our kids to be informed so that they can make informed choices about life and be able to achieve their goals long term.
It's very important to develop culturally relevant materials for Hawaii's youth. We have a really unique population here that is predominantly Asian and Pacific Islander, and 37% of our children are mixed race. So when our youth see materials that are developed on the mainland that feature primarily black and white couples, and the white boys are always matched with the white girls and the black boys with the black girls, they don't relate to that. They look at it and they say, they don't look like us. They don't talk like us. Nothing seems familiar. How does this relate to me? And so I'm really pleased to see that the University of Hawaii is developing materials that are designed to engage our youth and address their needs specifically. This is the first curriculum that has been designed for Asian and Pacific Islanders.
And the same question to you that I asked Kelly. Did you ever for a moment think that this was going to land all of you into a controversy about the appropriateness of the curriculum?
I did not, because in general, there is very strong support in Hawaii for adolescent reproductive health education. In 2012, we commissioned SMS Research to do a survey on community attitudes towards sexual health education. And to our amazement and to theirs, 97% of the respondents said it was important or very important to include sexual health education in public schools curriculum.
And how many respondents?
There were over 600. It was demographically representative of the islands in terms of ethnicity, the balance of Oahu and neighbor island people, age, and so forth. And people felt very strongly that sexual health was important for children to learn in school.
Peter, attitudes towards sex have changed quite a bit over the last 15 years, especially as we have a whole group of kids who have come up in the AIDS era and who are aware of things that their parents would have had no reason to be aware of when they were younger. Is it at all a concern that somehow, in some ways, we haven't kept pace with giving enough information, perhaps early enough?
Well, you know, behavior and attitudes really changed when the AIDS epidemic was happening in a major way, where you could actually see people that were sick with HIV. There was a major reduction in risk at that time. But since then, with new medications, rarely seeing people that are really sick or really dying with HIV, I think many young people have returned to those attitudes and practices of the past. Plus, they're really exposed to sexuality in every aspect of their life, whether it's on the internet or television or talking with their friends. In the Department of Health, we haven't been so engaged in the development of curriculum, but we really see the need for curriculum because we see the kids that have STDs. In Hawaii, young people between 15 and 24 make up perhaps half of all the STD cases that we find in Hawaii. The highest rates are 15 to 19-year-olds, school-age kids. Chlamydia is important, of course, because ultimately it can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease and infertility for young people. And we're seeing it across the board. We're seeing it in all racial groups, all ethnic groups, and all islands. So this curriculum that's being developed and other curriculums are really important to get the youth to understand what can happen. What are the implications of sexual activity?
You didn't exactly mention the teen pregnancy rate, but the fact that we're looking at middle schoolers, I mean, these are kids that could be 11, 12 years old, 13 years old, about a third of them who are sexually active?
I don't have the data on middle schoolers, but in grade 9, over 22% of kids report being sexually active. So that's 1 in 4, 1 in 5 already in grade 9. By the time they're in grade 12, it's over 50%, as high as 54%. Despite the best intentions, the advice, the guidance of parents, very often children are going ahead and making their own decisions. And I think what we all want is they be able to make well-informed decisions, decisions that will perhaps lead them to not have these kinds of rates of sexual transmitted diseases or unwanted pregnancy.
Judith?
This is something that parents and schools should be working together on. Schools can provide the information, the facts about how to protect yourself from pregnancy and STIs, but it's families that need to transmit their values to their children, to talk about what's morally right and wrong. Schools can't do that for parents. Parents have to share their beliefs and values with their children. Part of what we do is to offer workshops to parents on how to talk to young people about sexual health, to find out what's appropriate to talk about at different ages, or how to respond to something that the child sees in the media, or even how to answer those awkward questions about what did you do when you were a teenager.
That's probably one of the most difficult conversations that most parents will ever have to have with a child. Because it brings up everything that you felt about adolescence and at the same time trying to keep some distance with your child to be able to answer and focus on his or her question. The fact that we have had so many attitudes change in the last 15, 20 years. I mean, all you have to do is watch an episode of Glee to know that things have really changed. And kids are aware of those changes perhaps far more in advance than their parents. So do you find yourselves having to sync the parents with the kids far more these days?
One of the strongest protective factors against pregnancy and STIs is when young people have a trusted adult that they can talk to and ask their questions about sexual health. Otherwise, they're forced to resort to what they hear in the media or what their friends are telling them, and that's not always accurate. We know that 99% of parents think it's important to talk to children about sex, but only about half of them feel prepared to do that.
Isn't it also, though, the kind of sex that they're prepared to talk about? That's where a lot of this has come into, that looking at just sex between a boy and a girl, but not looking at couples that would be either lesbian couples or gay couples, and that's why so much of this, the language of all of this, as well as some of the character depictions, have come under fire, Kelly. When you talk to other parents, have they given you direct questions about why have you included this, or have they been at all concerned about that?
There is concern as to why same-sex scenarios are used. Part of the reason for that is because you can get an STI through a same-sex relationship. A lot of people fail to realize that. Kids fail to realize that. The other reason is because it's representative of our kids, and it doesn't seem right to alienate an entire group of kids. The percentage varies on who you ask how many people, are gay. It goes from 4% up to 20%. And an article I just got today said upwards of 20%. That's a significant – the 4% is not so significant, but up to 20% is a significant number of kids in the average classroom who are questioning their sexual identity at the least, if not already assured of their sexual identity. So to leave that group of kids out, in my opinion – isn't doing justice to our public school system. And I'd like to add that with that, parents have the right to opt their child out at any time. The parent nights are held. Parents can attend the parent nights. They can choose not to have their child participate in any controversial issue. That's the Board of Education policy. So if parents aren't comfortable with this or would like to teach themselves, for example, we had one parent whose child had been accelerated in school. So in seventh grade, they were very young. And the parent went to the parent night, said, this is a great curriculum, but I'm choosing not to have my child participate until next year. And that's fully acceptable. And we actually like the fact that the parent attended the parent night and became informed. Our website also has a lot of information on it that people can refer to related specifically to Pono Choices. But the fact is that Pono Choices is only one of, I believe it's seven curricula that are actually approved by the Department of Education for use in our schools.
But this is the one that's come under fire.
Correct.
Now, when a parent decides to to opt out, they can't really pick and choose. It's either in or out, correct? They can't say, gee, I don't want them in for lesson number seven.
That's my understanding, other than the condom demonstration.
That may be true with Pono Choices, but in the work that we and our partners have done in the schools, parents can choose to opt out for either the entire curriculum or for specific lessons if they choose to. However, since 2005, less than 1% of parents have chosen not to allow their children to participate.
If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking about Pono Choices, the sexual health curriculum that has come under fire in the last couple of months, and we want to hear from you. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or if you're somewhere else and listening to our live stream. We're going to go now to Damien calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Damien. Thank you for your patience.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, I am calling on a Pono Choices. I believe that it's a good curriculum that they have going on in schools to teach children about STD that's out there. Again, I'm a parent, and parents don't feel comfortable you do talk to your children about certain things. Sex is a topic that is touchy, especially a dad with girls and moms with boys, but just parents talking to the children about sex it's a touchy subject, and the kids don't want to really ask questions back. Now, this Pono Choices, they have that opportunity to see what's going on, to ask questions, to participate, with their parents' approval. I truly believe it's something that children out there should be informed on.
Damon, do you have children? Do you have children who are affected? Do you have 11, 12, 13-year-old kids who are in the program?
No, I don't have them. I don't have them that young. But I, you know.
But you've sort of been through this with your other ones, and you would have liked to have had some help back there?
Sure. I would want them. If when my children were in school, I would have wanted that to have.
Well, Damon, thanks very much for calling. We appreciate hearing from you. Now we're going to go to Malu from Kapahulu. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Hey, aloha. You know, I'm kind of the choir. So, you know, Pierce, my buddy, I was a middle school teacher for a number of years. I'm now working at Life Foundation, the oldest and largest agency working with people living with HIV and AIDS. And, you know, I love everybody who is doing what they can. The thing that I question, though, is why we don't have on the panel the people who object, the detractors. Because I, you know, it just blows my mind that you have different schools, different parents. You can look at Kailua Middle is going to be vastly different than Washington Middle, than King Intermediate. I'd like to know what the objections are from the people. I think that would be probably the component that's missing from this panel.
Well, I would tell you, Malu, that the fact that has been so much in the media, and to be able to talk to the people who developed the curriculum, that we felt for this program we were going to give people access to those who had helped create it and who supported it and who could answer real questions and who were not part of the DOE or not part of those who were criticizing the program. Perhaps we'll do that in the future. Thanks very much for your call. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. The program is in 12 schools, being piloted in 12 schools now. At what point will it begin to go further afield in Hawaii?
There's many variables impacting that, because schools do have a choice as to the curriculum they use or even if they teach sexual health. So it's really hard to say how far it will go, but the grant ends in 2015, and we're hoping at that time to not only be in the schools but also to reach out to some community agencies. So kids who might not be attending school or who didn't get the curriculum in the school can also become informed about making appropriate choices and informed choices about their sexual health.
Right now, the curriculum is in a research and pilot testing stage to find out if it is truly effective with our young people. And the feedback I've heard from youth who've been through it is that they like the curriculum. It's interesting and engaging, and it answers the questions that they have.
If all schools, though, don't have some sort of sexual health education, then what about those who are left out? Is that why you want to have this be community-based at some point?
Yes, most definitely. And Judith does a lot of work with the community-based agencies as well. And so making sure that kids are informed, it's so important. I personally in life don't like not having information. And mm-hmm. I believe that our kids are intelligent. They're being exposed to way more than what we were when we were young, and that they need to be informed to make the right choices. So yeah, getting it as widespread as we possibly can. If not this curriculum, then others that are similar.
Sexual health education is not mandatory in Hawaii schools. In states where sexual health education is required in schools, those are the states that have the lowest teen pregnancy and STI rates among their adolescents.
We also know that the kids that have dropped out of school or left school early are often at greatest risk and often have the least information. So anything that can be done through community-based organizations really is too good for reaching those kids.
When that goes to that community state, if it does, what about the fact that the kids will be minors and they'll be looking for information? Whereas it's in the school, they have to have a parental sign-off on it. Will they be able to get information? Because some kids, you know, may not be able to get parents to say, sure, that's a good idea.
That's a really good question. Our intention would be to have parental approval prior to using the curriculum with any child, but that's really something we would need to address as it arose, because if the child doesn't have a parent who's around or a legal guardian to sign for them, we would search out probably who would be the most appropriate to sign, you know, and to approve of their participation. But it's a bridge we need to cross when we get there, I believe.
All right. Right now, we need to take some more callers. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are filling up, so call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Eugene, calling us from Hilo. Aloha, Eugene. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. My comment is, you know, our schools are designed for our students.
Excuse me, Eugene, could you just speak up, please, and make sure you're speaking into the mouthpiece? We want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, sorry. It seems that our schools are designed to be able to assist our students in learning the facts and to becoming lifelong learners and to actually be able to have knowledge to make the correct choices. I've had the chance to observe some of the curriculums, and I was amazed at how perceptive the kids were. And one of the things that stuck in my mind that I hadn't really thought about was the teacher was talking about tattoos, which is really a big craze now for young people. Even students who are in middle school are getting tattoos. And in the old days, it was okay to sit under the mango tree and, you know, uncle or big brother would come and give you a tattoo. But today with the transmitted infections, it's really important that students know how different things are transmitted. And
Eugene, we're losing you, so please make sure you're speaking into it. Otherwise, we're going to have to wrap this up pretty quickly. We'd rather hear what you have to say.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, yeah. Just the factual information is really important so the students can make the correct decision.
So whether it's a tattoo or whether it's about sexual health, you feel that this is a good idea that this happens in school?
It should be mandatory. Everybody should know.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Going now to Rita, calling us from Makawao. Aloha, Rita. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you for asking.
Wonderful. My comment is regarding some of the very uncomfortable issues regarding sexual education in public schools. And my daughter now is in 11th grade, but when she was in 7th grade, she came home talking about something very uncomfortable I was uncomfortable with, which was the anal sex. And the misinformation that she had got from other students about this is a safe form and you can still be a virgin and you won't get pregnant and all of these things. I was at first shocked. I took her to the doctor to talk to the doctor about this because I was out of, you know, I didn't know what to say to her. It is so important to address what the students are discussing about sex and to clear up the misinformation that they are trading with each other. You know, this was very shocking to me that it was even being discussed in seventh grade. And I think as parents, you know, we don't know what they're discussing. And we need to address what the subjects are directly and factually, even though they're very, very uncomfortable.
Rita, thanks for your call. I mean, the essence of your message seems to be that even if it's an uncomfortable subject, you'd much rather have a standardized curriculum taught to your child so that information would be the same information to everybody and that there wouldn't be this sort of, you know, whisper campaign about how you should do this or how you should do that and keep yourself safe or a virgin.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Kelly.
I just wanted to add to that one interesting point regarding Pono Choices is that it actually has Ohana activities where kids take home lessons to discuss with their parents. And some of the feedback from the kids was, wow, I feel like I can talk to my parents now. Some of the feedback from parents was, it made me uncomfortable, but I'm glad it occurred because now we're having that discussion. And I think a lot of the other curricula that are out there do the same thing, you know, and have that discussion or start the dialogue so the parents become more comfortable as well as the kids.
Judith?
In the programs our partners do in the schools, the young people do an essay at the end of the program about what's the most important thing I did in this class so that the teachers have something to grade them on. And typically we get comments like, now I understand that it's okay to say no if I'm not ready to have sex. Or, you know, this is so complicated with all this negotiating and condoms and stuff. I'm not ready for this. I'm going to wait. sometimes people think that when you teach young people how to prevent unplanned pregnancies or STIs, that you're teaching them how to have sex and encouraging them to have sex. And that's not true at all. Every sex education curriculum emphasizes that abstinence is the best and safest way to prevent pregnancy and STIs. And they teach negotiation skills, decision-making skills, so that young people are prepared. Just as we teach our children to cross the street safely because we know that someday they're going to face the risks of traffic, we need to prepare our young people for the sexual risks that they will inevitably face.
Your bottom line is that information is not license.
Right.
Well, and adding on to that is condom use. So when they do decide they are going to be sexually active, it's important to know how to use condoms. And Hawaii has one of the lowest rates of condom use in the United States. I think just mid-40s% using condoms. So, again, we see the results in sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies.
Why the discomfort in showing how to put on a condom properly? Has anybody said to you, this is why it makes me uncomfortable?
I haven't gotten that specific feedback, actually, as to why it makes anyone
No, because you mentioned that could be the place where a parent could say, I'd like to opt out. And not have
Correct.
My child there.
You know, I've seen people looking very uncomfortable at the start of the presentation and feeling very relieved and much better informed at the end of the presentation. So I think it's something you maybe have to experience and work through to get rid of that anxiety that you're not really sure why you have it.
Because kids aren't the only ones who aren't using condoms. We have people who are in their 40s and their 50s and their 60s who are out there dating again who have some of the highest rates of not using a condom. Mm-hmm. Thinking somehow that, you know, they're beyond all that. All right, tonight we're talking about sex, specifically the Pono Choices Program. If you have a question for our panel, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Joining me tonight, Peter Whitaker, the chief of the STD AIDS Prevention Branch at the Hawaii Department of Health. Judith Clark is here. She's the executive director of the Hawaii Youth Services Network. And Kelly Roberts, the principal researcher for the Pono Choices curriculum. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Kim calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Kim. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you. I'm a parent. My child is enrolled in Hawaii Public Schools, and I'm probably a bit more conservative than many of the listeners. I hope that my daughter's going to abstain from sex till she falls in love and get married. So I'm a bit traditional. But at the same time, I want her to be informed about the risks associated with the different forms of sexual activity. And I don't see these goals as incompatible. So I commend the work you guys are doing. I think it's appropriate to inform our teens about the kinds of sexual activities they may be peer pressured to engage in and the associated health risks. And the bottom line for me is whether the curriculum is promoting abstinence as the best and healthiest choice. I'm hoping that you guys could speak on that a little bit. To what extent is it an abstinence-based curriculum?
All right. Thanks very much, Kim. We started to talk about that a little bit ago, but Judith, if you can speak to that briefly now, that would be helpful.
Hawaii law and Department of Education policies state that sexual health education must be abstinence-based, and it must include information on both abstinence and on how sexually active students can protect themselves from unplanned pregnancies and STIs. Our law also requires that the information we provide be medically accurate. So every curriculum that is currently used in the DOE public schools emphasizes abstinence as the best and safest method of preventing these problems. But they also provide information that allows students who do not choose abstinence to protect themselves.
Building upon that just a bit, the policy also covers if you are sexually active, you can become abstinent at any point in time. Obviously, you can't go back to being a virgin, but you can become abstinent at any point in time. And Pono Choices reiterates that, as well as continually reiterates the fact that abstinence is the only 100% effective way to not contract an STI, HIV, or have an unintended pregnancy. That is reiterated time and time again, and that's one of the things that teachers have said, if the child doesn't leave the classroom knowing that, something's not right, because it's reiterated at the end of every lesson, basically, as well as throughout lessons.
The issue of medical accuracy has been one of the criticisms of the program by those who want to criticize it. And from your perspective, you've clearly said that you think that that's just bogus, that it is medically accurate. But why is it that we seem to have such difficulty with some of the terminology, what is and isn't a genital, what is or isn't sex? Have we not gotten beyond that, where we can actually look at what's happening in the population of young people and say, these are some of the activities in which they might engage, and we're going to meet that with information?
We are meeting that with information. The reason that anal sex is even included in the curriculum is because you can get an STI and HIV that way. End of story. That's why that information is there, and to not be there would not be medically accurate. So not having the information there would be – and we also – you just heard a person say about young girls having anal sex so that they can remain virgins, so that they don't become pregnant. The misinformation is huge on that that's somehow safe.
Or a workaround.
Or a workaround, exactly. So making sure that kids understand the risks of that is very, very important.
All right, we're going to take some more calls now, going to Molly, calling us from Pahoa. Aloha, Molly. Thank you for your patience.
Hi, thank you. I am a teacher who has been teaching Pono Choices for about 3 years, and I just wanted to call. I've had a couple of questions that I think could help clarify what happens in class. It is very well developed. It's an amazing curriculum, and it reaches every style of learner. But the knowledge is to help the kids, and it might be for them, but it might be for their peers, because there is a lot of misinformation out there. And the parents are, they don't show up like they should for the parent night to know what's going on, which makes me think sometimes they're not showing up in their child's life when things like sex and drugs are coming onto the radar for these kids. Seventh grade isn't like it used to be anymore, and these kids are very intelligent. So, you know, I just think that some of the things that we aren't thinking about for them, there's a lot of goal setting in this curriculum. They're short and they're long-term goals, and the things that can get in the way, like unintended pregnancy, and the condom demonstration, that's a health skill. So if they're going to use it, or if they're going to tell their friends how to accurately put a condom on, that's something that's going to keep them safe, and that's raising their awareness, which I think as an educator is what we're trying to do for them, give them the knowledge so that they can arm themselves.
Molly, can I ask you a question about the parent night? You mentioned that sometimes parents don't show up for that. As you've been teaching for 3 years, do you have any sort of percentage of your classroom parents who turn up for the night?
I don't have percentage. I've been teaching Pono Choices for 3 years. I used to teach a different health curriculum. You know, this we could get between 4 to 10, and I have smaller classes, so I'm not like a large different public school that has hundreds of students. But the rate that does show up is alarming, in my opinion.
So, I mean, I'm just trying to get some barometer here. Half your classes, parents, you know, the kids in the class will have their parents turn up, or a third of them? I mean, just do you have any ballpark of that over time?
I would say like a fourth to a third. A third, we would be really happy. That would be a great turnout.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate the insight. Going now to Maria, calling us from Eva. And if you want to be next, here's our number, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689, if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or anywhere else you may listen to the live stream. Aloha, Maria. Thank you for your patience.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I have a question. What is your approach in terms of for homosexuality? I mean, we just passed the gay marriages here in the state of Hawaii, and I feel like there's a lot of fear about and a correlation between sex education and homosexuality, or even if that even is touched within your program.
Well, clearly it's in the program. When you have couples that are same sex and also opposite sex. Kelly, can you answer her?
Well, there are same-sex scenarios in the curriculum, which I explained earlier, and that's because you can get STIs that way. The curriculum does not promote any sexual choice. it's representative of the kids in the classroom for the most part. And the promotion of homosexuality, the Same-Sex Marriage Act wasn't even on my radar when we wrote the grant. And I know that shows that, you know, it's been around for like 20 years. I'm aware of that now. But that wasn't part of our agenda whatsoever. The curriculum does not promote homosexuality, but it presents information in a factual manner so that kids can make the informed choices. I think it's very – what's the word I want? Non-judgmental. It's factual. It's to the point. Teachers will say, you know, kids might giggle when they start the condom demonstration, and then they get over it and they move on. In many of the topics, one of the teachers said, you know, the kids with the same-sex scenario might say, hey, miss, that's two boys. It's like, yes, and then they move on. So for the kids, it's not a huge issue.
Yeah. I mean, the kids know who's who and what's what in a class, even sometimes before the adults may know who is having what orientation. The point that you were trying to make earlier that I think is going to Maria's question is that this was meant to be representative of what the kids are seeing in their daily lives, not to try to promote one type of sexual orientation over another.
That's correct. It doesn't promote any sexuality.
Again, I'd like to emphasize that in schools we can teach the facts, but it's up to families to talk about what's right or wrong.
Maria, thanks very much for your call. Moving on now to Kathy calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Kathy. Welcome to Town Square.
Good evening. You know, I'm a teacher for the DOE. I've been teaching for 20 years, and I've taught just about every sex ed program that's been developed. And I'm one of the pilot teachers for the Pono Choices program. And it's one of the best and the finest that teaches sex ed with respect. First, respect for the families, because any family has the choice to opt out anytime they want. And the way I do it, they can opt out for any of the lessons. And I think that the salient point that nobody has mentioned yet is that for seventh graders, very few parents really have knowledge of how much their children already know and have heard. That's been mentioned. But they haven't mentioned that the point of this program is to teach young people to be advocates, to go out and save lives. Because when we talk about the STIs that are out there, the lowest percentage is that 10% of middle school students are sexually active now, and that what we are trying to do is to give them information so that they can go out and teach their peers if the information is accurate. And that's one of the things that I always emphasize, is that you have to really listen carefully in class so that you can go out and teach your peers, because you might save their life. And, you know, the critical points that are being really argued about, you know, the homosexuality, my approach is always, we respect what your family has taught you. We are simply saying, be tolerant and go home and talk to your parents. And it might be uncomfortable, but I'll give you extra credit if you can come back and tell me what you told your parents, and they will sign a paper so that we know that you are now talking to your parents now before you need to talk to them later because there's a problem. So
yeah, I think
these are some of the issues that are really important that people aren't really talking about.
Well, we want to talk about them tonight, and I want to ask you, since you've been teaching this for a while, and you've been teaching for you know, a long time now, but with this program in particular, have you been in the situation where you have a kid whose sexual orientation leads him or her not to want to talk to parents, and for whom this may be the only really good basis of information he or she may be getting?
Oh, definitely. I've had students come up to me and say, I can't talk to my parents. When I start the curriculum, I ask students, you know, give me a show of hands. How many of you are uncomfortable talking to your parents about sex? And it's usually about 70% of the class has their hands go up. And I say, you know what, sweetie? By the time we finish this curriculum, you are going to be really comfortable. And a lot of you are going to be able to talk to your parents where you couldn't talk to them before. And generally, that's the case. I mean, the numbers go down. By the time we finish the curriculum, it's about 20% of the kids who raise their hand. And they say, so see, it wasn't any big deal. You should be able to talk about sex openly and freely, like you're talking about dinner. Like, you know, are you going to have mashed potatoes and gravy? It is natural. And it is something that should be open, and you should be able to talk about it at home freely and openly before there is a need or a problem. Because if you can talk about it when you are 12, then you've got the dialogue going so that there won't be any issue when you're 15 or 16 because you haven't had somebody that you can talk to. And if you can't talk to your parents, go find an adult that you trust and that you feel comfortable with who is like a family member, maybe an auntie, you know, maybe, you know, like an older cousin. And in many cases, these are the kids, the 12 and 13-year-olds, who are educating their older cousins and teaching them, hey, you know, you are not being safe. This is what I've learned in class. And I've had many of the students come back to me and tell me exactly that.
Well, good on you, Kathy, and thanks very much for calling in. We appreciate your insight, too. Always good to talk to teachers. Going now to Steve, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, good evening. I was listening to the last couple of callers, and just kind of got me thinking about what alternative schools might have to educate youth when, if it's true that kids are having sex at a younger age, STD rates are slightly increasing, and the condom usage rates are increasing. Can we say that the sex education being taught at such a young age, I was taught at 11, and it might even be younger now, is working?
It's important for sex education to take place before young people become sexually active. We know that by the ninth grade, you know, here in Hawaii, 20% of them have already had sex. So if we want them to protect themselves or to consider abstinence, we need to do it before they start having sex.
And for a lot of them, before their bodies really start to change so much that they don't understand perhaps what's going on. Wasn't that the whole point of trying to bring it in at that age to begin with? I mean, the average age of a girl getting her first period is, what, 12 in the U.S.?
And it's going down.
And it's going down. I mean, it's not unheard of for a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old to have a period. So these things are changing for a lot of reasons, and that's a whole other conversation. But the point being that to have information before a kid is dumbfounded by what's going on or finds himself or herself in a situation that is not only uncomfortable but dangerous.
When we commissioned SMS Research to do their survey on attitudes towards sex education, one of the questions we asked is, when should it start? And the consensus was that most topics should begin in the middle school grades, with some things such as anatomy and puberty and good touch, bad touch, starting in the elementary schools.
We're going to go now to Dirk calling us from Kaneohe. If you want to join the conversation, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you're calling us from the neighbor islands. Aloha, Dirk. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. I wanted to challenge the notion that an abstinence approach is correct. Two of my children went to the public schools, and they brought home this question, why should I wait until I'm married to be sexually active? My answer was, you shouldn't, because I want my kids to go to college. And I want them to get established in a career, and I would like them to delay marriage until, you know, the mid-20s. And I think it is ludicrous to ask them to delay their sex lives until the mid-20s. And so, you know, I think an abstinence approach really isn't realistic if you have aspirations in life beyond just getting married.
Well, good question. But doesn't that go back, Judith, to, you know, what you were saying earlier, that, you know, you're going to teach the facts, but the families need to give the values?
That's absolutely true. And the fact is that over 95% of Americans do have sex before they get married.
And that's only been escalating in recent years, and with not a whole lot of indication that it's going to go the other way. Dirk, thanks very much for bringing up that point. Going off now to the North Shore, and we're talking to Joe. Aloha, Joe.
Aloha. I just had a quick comment and a question. The comment is just to thank you for having this informative and thoughtful discussion, because usually what we hear in other media outlets is this subject treated as, you know, a manufactured controversy by people like Representative McDermott, who seem to have much more of like an anti-gay bias that's driving his critique rather than concern about the health and well-being of young people. So thank you for helping to inform us of the program in this more thoughtful way. And the question I have, kind of related to that like hysterical response that's being whipped up by Representative McDermott and others, is what is the review process going forward, and how can we, who are concerned about maintaining such a pilot program and potentially expanding it, know that these kind of critiques are not going to tear it down?
All right. Good question. Thanks very much, Joe. Kelly?
The Pono Choices curriculum has been reviewed by the Office of Adolescent Health for medical accuracy. If we had not met medical accuracy, we would not have been allowed to be in any classrooms. Beyond that, the Department of Education has now reviewed the curriculum 3 times. There was a panel put together to review the curriculum. It was a diverse panel. You can find the names of the people, I believe, on the
It's on the DOE website.
There's another website it's on too, but I'm forgetting the name. Sorry. And we're hopeful that it will pass approval. There might be some changes, you know, asked to be made, which for the most part, I believe we should be able to accommodate. And the best thing that people could do who are in support of sexual health education for our youth is to let the Department of Education know that, to let your Board of Education representatives know that, and to let your legislators know that, that for the majority of people, sexual health education for our youth is very important. The fact that parents have the right to opt out puts the, you know, gives them the power to not have their child participate if that's what they feel is right for their child. So please, if you believe it's a positive thing, not just Pono Choices, but sexual health education in general, do contact the Department of Education and your legislators and the media even to get some positives out there, because the majority are in support of sexual health education.
Kelly, Joe is talking about, you know, this the controversy and certain people who are involved in this, including Representative McDermott. But part of this also kind of goes back to, did the DOE maybe not put the best handle on all of this by keeping it more secret? I mean, it's not available. It's nothing that a parent can say, well, let me have a look at it first and really let you know how I feel about this. That there's nowhere you can go to be able to get it. It's not on a website. And there was training that was supposed to happen before one was supposed to be able to look at the to be able to look at the curriculum. We talked to someone else in the media who was trying to review it and was told you need to sit into a class before you can do that. Did that put it in a bad light from the beginning?
You know, I think that that was misconstrued to a degree. Teachers are required to go through a 2.5-day training prior to using the curriculum, and the reason for that is because it's very important that it be delivered in a sequential order.
You're talking about integrity.
Integrity of the curriculum, by far. When we first received questions to receive the curriculum, I wasn't aware, and forgive my ignorance, but I wasn't aware of the policy regarding the release of public information.
You had nothing to do with that.
What do you mean?
I mean, this was not your purview to say it will be public or won't be public. That was something that had to do with the DOE.
No, that wasn't the DOE, actually. It's state law that information that's, I believe, publicly funded, which would be through the Office of Adolescent Health, is to be released. But the University of Hawaii has a process for that, and the curriculum is actually a product of the University of Hawaii. The Department of Education was a partner in the development, but it is not their curriculum. So it really wasn't for them to release, which I think was a point of confusion. We were not releasing the curriculum because we didn't want it to be misrepresented, and we didn't want people to take the information out of context. Again, the importance of using it in a sequential manner and with the integrity cannot be overstated. So that was a university decision. That was actually my decision originally to not release it, but to actually sit and talk with people and go through the curriculum so that they could gain an understanding of it. There were people who didn't want to do that, and that's when it came out and when I became aware of the policy regarding release of public information. And that's when we were set up a system within the University of Hawaii to release the curriculum to those who requested it.
But they have to be requested. It has to be requested. It's not just out there publicly.
That's correct. It's not out there publicly.
All right.
It's just like any other professional skill. It requires training to be able to use it effectively.
I don't think anybody was really having any problems or concerns with the fact that you would want to have a qualified person teach it and teach it well. But the fact that it seemed to be shrouded put everybody who's been talking about it in this way on edge, because it felt as if there were a veil that wasn't being lifted.
Much of the information regarding the curriculum is on our website, and we've recently updated it somewhat so that which was always there, the definition of abstinence, why the term anal sex is used. That information is on our website. One of the issues that came out is that the same-sex scenarios were not included in the parent night, and that was not done in any clandestine way. The reason for that was we didn't think it was an issue, which for many parents it's not. But we are working on reestablishing and revising the parent night script so that the same-sex scenarios will be the parents will become informed that there are same-sex scenarios, because that may be a reason to not include
Let's talk about that in just a second. Let me just remind you that we're talking about Pono Choices, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation, you still have a little time left to do that. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You are just listening to Kelly Roberts. She's the principal investigator and researcher of Pono Choices and is here to answer your questions too. So how would you change that script for the parent night so that it would be more representative of what parents really need to know, or somehow head off some of the issues that we've been talking about?
Well, the parent night is very comprehensive. The teachers have given feedback that it's the most comprehensive parent night they've done. We actually have a manual for teachers to use. The same-sex scenarios then will be included in the parent night script so that teachers inform them these are the scenarios we're using.
What about the issue that one of our teachers who called earlier said, well, she can't get enough parents here? That's not her fault.
Well, it's just wonderful that this controversy has actually occurred, because maybe more parents will step up and be involved in that decision and become better informed. And it's nice that the general public is also looking and being concerned with teen sexual health.
I mean, we haven't had one caller who has, made their position known and saying this is horrible. We'd like not to see this happen. We kind of look at the barometer of how attitudes have been changing, not just about how we teach sex or what we're learning by listening to our kids, but just watching society change as it's been happening, particularly here in Hawaii over the last couple of years. Are we sort of playing catch up, Peter, just a little bit of trying to get all of this to sync together, attitudes from those who may be a little bit older to sync with those who are in their teens and tweens and 20s and 30s?
I think that's a perpetual cycle that will always be catching up. If we think of our relations with our parents, and our children are probably thinking about that right now with us. But there should be some basic information that's available to all. And it's information that we've heard that can be used for parents and young people to talk together. And if it's not provided in schools, I'm really not certain where else it can be provided. So I think that's really one of the strong points of this curriculum.
We've got a couple more callers we want to move through if we can. So I'm going to ask you to be brief. Donna calling us from Aiea. Aloha, Donna. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I just want to say I heard the other two teachers. I am a teacher as well of this Pono Choices since it's a pilot program. And just a few, you were asking about the how many parents are coming. To mine, I have 150 per semester for students, and I would have only in the beginning was only 25 at first, but since this controversy, I had over 100 parents come.
So it was good press for you.
It was great. And, I went through the whole thing, and then I braced myself for all of those questions, and they said, so what's the big controversy? And I told them about the same-sex scenarios. I told them about some of the definition. And I still, even last semester, I only had two students out of the 150 for an opt-out.
Okay, so let me ask you this very briefly. Is this more of a tempest in a teapot?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I'm saying, is this more of a tempest in a teapot? Is this more of just been a manufactured controversy than something about which we really feel upset about?
I went to this thing in Ben Parker, and it was totally misconstrued. Oh, my goodness, did they they turned it upside down with this curriculum and did not represent it very well to the community at all.
All right. Thanks very much for calling in.
All right,
always good
you.
To hear from teachers. And now going to Dr. Joshi from Maui. Aloha.
Aloha. This is Dr. Joshi. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. We got just very little time, so I'll ask you to be brief.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I think is very difficult, and I think parents aren't taking into account, because I see children or kids who have sexually transmitted diseases, is the availability of sexual material on the Internet. And I'm almost convinced that the parents have zero idea exactly even what their third or fourth graders are watching on the Internet. And some of the stuff that's out there is absolutely horrible. And if the parents aren't aware of what their kids are doing on the Internet, no matter what you do or don't teach them, it's useless if they're not also monitoring the Internet behavior.
All right, so it seems to be that if you're saying that some of the kids you're seeing who are in fourth and fifth grade who are already coming in with a great deal of information that may be right or maybe not so factual, that your opinion is the parents really are very unaware that they've gotten some of this material and they've gotten it online. Would that be right?
Right, and we're talking about kids who are very young, and you know, we're talking about girls who are 10, 12 years old who have already become pregnant or who have already had sexually transmitted diseases, and syphilis is on the rise, and there's just a tremendous amount of not so much bad information, but just sexual acts that they can watch on the Internet, which their parents are even unaware of and their kids know.
All right. Thank you so much for calling
Thank
in
you.
And weighing in. Aloha. And very quickly, we're going to go off to Richard calling us from Makiki. Aloha, Richard. We're running short of time, but I wanted to get you in, so I'll ask you to be brief.
Thank you. Okay, so I like to question this part about the target audience. It says the target population is the Native Hawaiians, part Hawaiians, and Asian Pacific Islander students ages 11 through 13 who attend seventh grade intermediate schools, okay? So, but we also have a thing in our Constitution, the Hawaii State Constitution, Article 10, that says Section 1 of the Constitution of the State of Hawaii specifies there should be no discrimination in public education institutions because of race, religion, sex, or
ancestry. So is your point then that it goes too much to the Hawaiian side of our population?
My point is it violates the Constitution of Hawaii.
All right. Let's see what they have to say about that. Thank you so much.
While this curriculum was designed to meet the needs of Asian and Pacific Islander students, or more realistically, it's not just Asian and Pacific Islander students, it's students of Hawaii, and that includes all of us of Caucasian, Asian, Pacific Islander, Black, Hispanic, whatever we happen to be, we're all part of Hawaii, and that's what this curriculum is about.
So while it may use the Hawaiian culture as a basis for being able to discuss it, because we are here in Hawaii, it's not meant to be discriminatory of anybody else.
I don't think so. Kelly?
Oh, gosh, no. We've worked on a lot of Hawaiian culturally based activities, and the underlying premise is that if you're in Hawaii, Hawaii is the host culture, and everyone can learn through the Hawaiian culture as you can learn through anyone's culture.
And it's just the basis for informing the information, being able to reach out in a way that you see as being culturally
local.
Sensitive
yes.
and local. I want to thank all of you for being with me tonight and for having a very frank conversation, and for all of you who called in. My thanks to Peter Whitaker, the chief of the STD AIDS Prevention Branch in the Hawaii Department of Health. Also Judith Clark, the executive director of Hawaii Youth Services Network. And Kelly Roberts, the principal researcher for the Pono Choices curriculum. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock right here for The Conversation. Meanwhile, have yourselves a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.